views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Hi, Bob. Welcome back to the program.
I'm glad to be back on.
So we're going to talk about cyber warfare, and you're my expert. You've come on. What is this, the fourth time?
Yeah, I think so. I think we've got three others in the can, and it's always fun. So I'm ready to rumble.
Well, let's talk about cyber warfare.
Sure.
It's been a hot topic lately. Well, sort of in the alternative media and kind of starting to grow. But how pervasive is cyber warfare?
Well, my comments are quite clearly going to be a guess, because most cyber warfare is, kept secret from pretty much everybody, except when it can't be. But I'm assuming that cyber warfare has become quite pervasive, and that we have our own, cyber core here in the United States, and there are
because NSA can't do offensive attacks. They're supposed to do security.
Right.
So they created cyber warfare. Now, is that part of NSA or part of a different organization
altogether? It's part of the Department of Defense, but it's definitely connected with the NSA.
They actually sit in the
same building in Maryland.
They sit right next to each other, but they created another unit so it could be legal.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because everything's illegal until you figure out how to make it legal. So, that's. But I'm not. Do we need a cyber war group? Yeah, I really think we do. And what's sort of amusing is, you've got countries as small as Syria. They're at the Syrian Electronic Army, and the Iranians have a cyber war group. All of the NATO countries have cyber war groups. The Chinese definitely have a cyber war group that they've disavowed repeatedly, but.
Nobody admits to it, but they all have them.
The interesting exception is that Russia does not have anything formal in the way of a military cyber war arm. Huh. What they prefer to do, and this is just really, this is Russia, what can you do? They hire cyber criminals as contractors. This gives the Russian government plausible deniability on everything. It's like, hey, that's not us. It's just some cybercrime guys. Hey, we're working on it. Blah blah blah. So
who paid for it?
If they have a formal group, they're not telling us their name. But it really looks like they just basically contract the work that they need done.
Doesn't the internet and cyber warfare pretty much equal all the countries out? Because you really only need a few computers and a really smart guy or gal to be able to do this. Because Julian Assange, when he was 16, he proved that when he broke into the Pentagon. So it really doesn't take our 1,200 military bases to have a cyber warfare unit.
No. You put together a team. Doesn't have to be a big team. Good facilities and they don't even have to be in the same place, although I just imagine there's some synergies in having everybody in a room, but you wouldn't have to do that. And there was this group, the Shadow Brokers, that posted some stuff on the dark web about, we've got a bunch of NSA cracker tools, and the first guy with $500 million wins the auction. They're aiming high.
Did anybody buy them?
No. And the top bid right now is $1,086 or something like that. Somebody actually submitted a string of bids using a Bitcoin key phrases that were in the long internet tradition of Rickrolling, if you know what that is.
I don't.
Yeah, but anyway, there's a singer, I can't remember his name, but his, you know, he's kind of a meme out there. If you look up Rick Rowling on it, it's not really significant here other than it's just humorous aside. But these guys, that whoever the shadow brokers are peeved because they're, it's like, you know, you guys are all weenies. This is really good stuff. We're not giving it away for free, blah, blah, blah. But the nature of the auction is a little bizarre, too, in that you basically escrow, you know, a certain amount of Bitcoin to be in the auction. Well, the basic plan is, the seller is going to take all the money, not just the winning bid, but all the money.
Well, yeah.
And it's sort of like, well, duh, that's why it's not going to work, Jack. And
they're idiots who, then. You know, they're taking
like,
all
it's like
the
if
money.
Like you went to buy a car and there was one car on the lot and 100 people there and everybody's bidding on it. And then the dealer keeps everybody's money and one guy gets a car. You'd burn the place down. But, you know, hey, the internet's dark web is sort of a different place. So,
well, you can learn a lot on the dark web as far as
yeah.
what's going on. It's pretty much known on the dark web that cyber warfare is going on and what.
Yeah.
They're and, first to know. And, they're the ones doing it in a lot of cases.
Let's talk about the ones that we can see. And the one I'm going to use as an example kind of leads into something else we're going to talk about in a bit. But last year around Christmas time, a big section of Ukraine went dark. Somebody hacked their electric grid and turned off the lights for a matter of a few days. And it's, you know, widely assumed that it was the Russians. Although, of course, they denied it. And when, you know, the people who did the forensic backtracking on it, it did kind of lead to a cybercrime group, but that's their style, you know, contractors. So anyway, we are seeing nation states taking in the cyber attack approach. Now, to be fair, the old school warfare way of taking out the electric grid was through, bombing. The destruction there is not recoverable in a time frame of days. You're dark until you build a new power plant.
Sure, yeah.
And so, you know, I hate to say that I'm a fan, but cyber war at least can be undone.
Unless you're talking about Sucksnack or however you pronounce it. It was the Olympia. It was called Olympic
Games
something.
Was the official U.S. name for it.
They were blowing up nuclear
centrifuges. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
For separating uranium gas and concentrating it into a solid metal. Yeah, that was a nifty piece of code writing. They had to overcome basically what's called air gap security, where the Stuxnet, the facilities at Natanz in Iran, were not connected to the internet or any other external network. They were isolated from the larger world, and Stuxnet was introduced there. Basically on flash drives, the agents who deployed this basically left flash drives sitting around in places where workers congregated and just hoped that they'd basically be greedy and curious and pick them up and plug them in. And that's how that worked.
That's funny, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. The problem with Stuxnet had an auto-destruct piece in the code that basically said, you know, run for so long and then clean yourself up and die. So it was basically designed to go in, do its damage, come out, and be undetectable. According to the movie Zero Days, which we've both seen, the Israelis who were helping us with this decided that they needed a little bit more aggressive form of spreading. And so they added code to turn it into a worm. And a worm is basically code that will automatically install itself over whatever available networking was found. Well, these flash drives, of course, went to Natanz, but then they went home with the owners and they plugged them in and it escaped into the internet and infected hundreds of thousands of devices worldwide. And that's
and then what happened.
And that's how it was discovered.
But what happened when it went to hundreds of devices worldwide? It didn't, because it was only programmed to take care of.
It would only.
So it didn't do anything other than be an infection everywhere.
But it also became, it went from being a very closed source project to what is now in essence an open source project, and Stuxnet can be rewritten by clever people to go against any type of facility. It could power plants, water,
so it was really
plants.
For lack of a better word, it was really stupid what Israel did.
Yeah, yeah. What they were being greedy and impatient, and circumvented the auto destruct feature effectively. But of course, this is, you know, this is information that we're getting from people who are reluctant to speak at all. There's absolutely no way to prove it either way, but it's a plausible story, and I think we can go with it. So,
well, it looks like, according to top officials in Iran, is once they identified it and knew it existed, that was how they were able to protect their facilities from any further attacks. So now they are so much more.
Yeah.
You know, before they had no idea. They were firing people left and right, thinking that their scientists and engineers were incompetent because all of a sudden their stuff was blowing up and they had no idea what was going on. To, oh, the U.S. did this or Israel did this together.
Yeah.
And now we know how to defend ourselves. And they started taking down our facilities, didn't they?
Well, the Iranians targeted 5 Manhattan-based U.S. banks and launched basically a denial-of-service attack in retaliation. Wasn't really, like, damaging in any significant way, but it sent a message and said, hey, quit messing with us or we'll take you out. There have been others. A Syrian Electronic Army put a fake news release on, I think it was Associated Press, that caused a 400 or 500 point drop in the stock market one day. And even though the Associated Press corrected the fake message, you know, repudiated it, it still caused a big enough movement in the stock market that if somebody knew in advance, they could have taken advantage of that and made a significant pile of dough selling, you know, selling stock short that day. So, you know, it's kind of like messages are being sent by nation states to each other, basically saying, don't mess with us. And for instance, North Korea, okay, the Sony hack that came in advance of the release of the movie that was going to be making fun of
the interview.
Yeah, where it was purportedly a comedy about two bumbling journalists being sent in to assassinate Kim Jong-un or whoever the guy is who's
the leader of North Korea.
The leader of North Korea. And he was not amused. Seriously.
It was kind of a funny movie.
Yeah,
I'm
sure.
Really stupid.
I'm sure.
But it was stupid, but it was funny.
But yeah, the movie was being produced by Sony, and so the North Koreans basically ransacked the saved files of the Sony Corporation and released all sorts of embarrassing and interesting information online. And it cost Sony like millions of dollars to clean it up, because that nearly every system on their network was infected. And so, you know, it wasn't a trivial reprisal. It was actually very effective and really pinpoint, you know, I mean, this is pinpoint bombing, if you will, you know, the kind where you watch, we saw during Iran War One, where we could watch the bomb drop into a chimney hole. It's kind of like most businesses, most countries really aren't prepared.
They aren't prepared to be attacked
for this yet. You know, everybody thinks that we're really good on attack, but the defensive part of it is still being developed.
Well, the group Anonymous has notoriously went after the Church of Scientology and shut their servers down and they clogged them up. And I'm really glad they went after that one radio host that was a bigot and white supremacist.
Yep. And they've been after the Ku Klux Klan and some other white supremacy groups. They're very engaged in, you know, hacktivist type activities. And what they're doing is illegal, but you don't see any.
Nobody's doing anything about it.
District attorneys going after them. Because
it's
the third rail of politics. You know, you don't really want to be defending groups that are generally speaking despised by everybody else. It's, you know, tough to get votes when you've just saved the Klan from extinction, you know.
Yeah, who's going to stand up for the Klan? Exactly.
Yeah, they're not a big voting block there. And, you know, one of the things that I just got back, I went in September, I went to Orlando for a 4-day cybersecurity conference put on by the ISC Squared and another security group called As Is, and another security group that's run by the FBI called InfraGuard. And these three organizations had a big security congress. One of the keynote speakers was Ted Koppel, and I was looking at my schedule before going there, and I'm going, why the heck would you get Ted Koppel to come to a security congress? And he's got a book, a book about it called Lights Out, and it's all about what happens, what would happen if the lights went out and stayed out, and how vulnerable the actual U.S. electric grid is, what kind of plans are in place for remediation or recovery in the event of an attack, what the situation is all about. And my initial impressions were, this guy's a TV guy. What could he possibly know? But the speech was very interesting. And what could he possibly know? He learned from people he knew in government who were in a position to actually provide,
because he had a lot of good sources, and he's a journalist.
He's well known. And then he spent 2.5 years putting this book together. So it's very well researched. You know, this comes back to the Ukrainian power out. He was taking a look at, okay, what happens if it happens here and it stays out?
Yeah, because we have plans to get it back. I had a security expert. He was the commanding officer for the NYPD that was in charge of terror attacks, but stuff like this, natural disasters. What happens when the electric grid? So when the electric grid went out on the East Coast and in New York, he was in charge of dealing with that crisis.
Right.
And he talked about it and, you know, the issues around it. And I'm sure this was much like what Ted Koppel was talking about.
Yep.
And probably with a group of security experts, he went into it even more deep.
Yeah. And the problem with the U.S. Power grid is that there are about 3,200 companies that contribute to the grid. The big ones have all the security that you would expect a big corporate business in any sector to have. But the issue is that all these little rural cooperatives and small municipal or small regional power companies, they don't have the staff, the knowledge, the financial wherewithal to really, really harden their networks the way that they're supposed to be. And Ted's point is like, what happens if they come in on a weak side and then navigate through the, because the power control infrastructure is shared by all power companies.
So basically you can get in from a smaller,
right,
unprotected group and then go and infect the entire grid.
Yep. And the point that he was putting out in the book is that there are certain aspects of the physical distribution system that are very vulnerable because they can't be replaced. And these are the very, very large step up and step down transformers that you see, you know, in these big fence enclosed yards where power distribution happens. Most of these transformers are custom built for a particular, built for this spot only. Spares, if they exist at all, are very, very limited. There may not be an exact match spare for the unit that fails. And building one can take a year or more.
Well, could you, like they did with the nuclear power plants in Iran, could they overheat the or short the system out and pretty much destroy all those components?
Yeah, the way that the electric power system works is that you've got power creation, you know, generation on the power plant side. And then you've got consumption on the consumer side. This value needs to be balanced. In other words, they only need to be making as much electricity as is actually being consumed at the moment. And so there's a lot of, you know, control systems that are in there to make sure that that happens. If you were, if you were able to build a Stuxnet-like exploit that told a generating plant to create more power when there wasn't a need for it, this stuff goes out onto the grid and it's not being consumed, it's not being used, it's not being stored, and it can cause the actual distribution cables to get hot and melt. It can cause power transformers to overheat and explode.
So if they did that in mass, they could just they could destroy the components.
Yep.
And then how long would it take to
rebuild that? Exactly. And if they did it a certain few key places located, and if you just took out maybe, you know, half a dozen or 10, you could really turn the lights off all over the place and keep them off for a long, long time. And then you...
What's a long time?
Weeks, months. And the thing is that without electricity, well, then you have problems with the water supply, because water, of course, is electrically pumped into those big water towers we have all over the place. And when those water towers empty out, that's it. No more water for people who are depending on it. Without water, you can't flush your toilets. So now we have a sewage and human waste issue that will get really, really nasty in a big hot hurry if it's like Manhattan.
Oh, they'd be off.
Okay, so I got my stuff in a bucket. Now where?
Yeah, because at least here where I am, I'm on 11 acres of woods.
Yeah,
I could
go
in a hole.
Sneak at, yeah, you see, and I'm kind of going, you know, got a cabin in Wisconsin and there's a river flowing by it. So I got water and, well, I'm not going to say sewer because I'm not going to be tossing my stuff in the river, but I've got woods that I could, you know, I could set up an outhouse. But that's the thing. You can't have 12 or 14 million people digging holes in the street in order to, you know, I mean, it's just, it would get nasty. And they talked about things like evacuation. Okay, so we're just going to evacuate everybody. No, that's not going to work. And then it was kind of like, well, what about feeding people? Well, you talked with somebody at, you know, in the military. You said, oh, we've got like, you know, 23 kajillion meals ready to eat. You know, ready to go here. We could just get them all to New York or whatever. Well, it turns out, you know, it's about 3 days worth of eating, and then we're out of that.
We need to take a short break, and we will be back in a few moments.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough 5-step process to help you design a culture that is authentic, innovative, and successful. Learn how to create change with Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence, and Claudette Rowley. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit ClaudetteRowley.com.
There are so many resources out there for meditation, but did you know that Atana's Heart Earth Healing Meditation is available for you for free? Yes, that's right. You can receive this free healing meditation today from Atana Badili. All you need to do is visit his website, atanamethod.com. That's ATANAMethod.com. And sign up. You will receive your free meditation instantly. That's atanamethod.com.
Get into it for 2016. Do you want more prosperity, clarity, energy, and balance in your life? Join Lynn Brown now for one of her amazing workshops, each focusing on a key part of living your best life. For more information and to register for one of these amazing workshops, visit LynnBrownEvent.com. That's LynnBrownEvent.com. And get into it this 2016 with Lynn Brown.
Hey, everyone. This is Dr. Pat. I am so thrilled. I've had the honor of working with Leslie Fontaine for the past year or so. And what she has created in her hit program, Sheer Alchemy, transcends what most of us get to listen to or hear in any point in time in our lives. But beyond that, Leslie is working with people all over the world, and she has created something phenomenal based on the feedback and input from the Archangels, from the Ascended Masters, from the Light Beings, and most importantly, from each and every one of you. So if you want to change your life, if you're ready to step into your own version of Sheer Alchemy, please give Leslie a call at 678-665-3366. And why? Because this is what you're going to be prepared to do. Be amazed, and on your part, connect with the Ascended Masters that are there to help you custom make the life that you are meant to live.
A word of caution. If you prefer the status quo and you are not interested in improving every aspect of your life, this book will trigger the shift out of you. The Truth is Funny, Shift Happens is available now. Author Colette Steffen brings the powerful knowledge and life-changing energy and empowerment from the radio airwaves to the pages of her new book. To get your copy in paperback or ebook, visit thetruthisfunny.com today.
And we are back. I'm Sarah Westall, and we've been talking with Bob Weiss. He's our resident cybersecurity expert and our ethical hacker. He works for CIT Data Security. You can get his contact information on my website at sarahwestall.com. If you have not looked into your own security at your company, I really recommend you talking to him because it is a very serious issue. And I also want to remind you that you can get any of my episodes at sarahwestall.com. And there also is a lot of data and information that accompany each episode. I do different articles on each one, so you can have facts and information that accompany each one, as well as guest contact information. I want to also tell you that my show plays on WBLQ in New York, Rhode Island, and Connecticut, and it streams live on Transformation Talk Radio on Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Also, will play 7 days a week on Transformation Talk Radio and is available on podcasts on over 90-plus digital channels, so all of your favorite podcast channels, as well as on my website at sarahwestall.com, where you can also sign up to get the podcast feed there as well, or sign up for my newsletter. I send out updates and so forth on the different shows that I have going on. So let's now get back to Bob Weiss.
So then what happens? What was the outcome of that?
I mean, it's chaos. It's chaos, yeah. I mean, you're going to get people who are going to begin to prey on their neighbors to take their stuff, because it's like, well, if it's you or me, it's going to be me. And
well, I don't think so if it's you or me.
Yeah, I mean, it's
I might win that fight.
Yeah, well, not literally you or me.
But, I know.
But, you know, things could get really, really nasty. Then there was a really fascinating chapter on the Mormon church. Turns out that the Mormons have a warehousing and distribution system that rivals Walmart in size and scope.
Wow, okay.
So if this is a genuine concern for you, converting to Mormonism would be actually kind of a play.
They keep you okay.
Because they've got it all worked out. You know, it's kind of like, well, backup generator. Okay, so I got a backup generator and blah.
Well, a lot of countries are off the grid. They're, because they were so far behind, a lot of, like, China and some countries in Africa, they're just setting up with solar right off the bat.
Right.
Yep. So they don't have the same issues that we have here.
Yeah, and what was one of the more disturbing parts is that cybersecurity investigators have pretty much detected and proven that both the Russians and the Chinese already have exploits deployed in our grid. We can assume that we have done the same. And he talks about, okay, so with the Chinese and with the Russians and with us, there's a lot of interlocking economic activity. And so there's no real good incentive for them to do that to us unless that we were pushing them back against the wall ourselves, okay?
Well, it's so more the small groups that we're worried
about. You work your way down to the Iranians and the Syrians, you know.
Or some small group we've killed their relatives.
North Korea, which is a wild in the streets, kind of a rogue nation, that they are, in fact, led by a guy who might be capable of anything. But then what about, you know, groups like Daesh, you know, what they're commonly referred to as ISIS or Al-Qaeda, which is, in fact, making big strides to return to the stage of, Islamic terrorism. If they were to develop, which is unlikely, or purchase, which is very possible, the wherewithal, you know, the resources necessary to stage an attack like this, well, they have absolutely nothing to lose. They have no interlocking economic interests with the West, and turning off the lights in Rome or London or Paris or New York or the Eastern Seaboard or whatever, that would just be a colossal up yours.
Same with some South American countries, you know, down there. Well, that gets me back to 0 days. Apparently, it was backed by a group of anonymous NSA employees.
Yeah.
Who are the cybersecurity experts there who want it to become a national conversation. And they actually fed the information, but they did it anonymously so that they wouldn't be the Snowden and get, you know, hung out to dry.
Yep.
Now, do you think that it's true or just propaganda? Or what do you think? What do you think about that?
You know, based on what I know about the business in general, I think this is it's a real concern. I think that, do believe that the next war will be electronic. And even now, you know, current warfare, there's so much fly-by-wire, like drone and stuff
satellite.
That. And it's kind of like, well, is that computer? Is that cyber? Well, parts of it is. I mean, the communication piece.
But think of this. With satellites, they know where everything's at.
Yep.
from a geo, you know, mapped out. They know where people are on the grid. They know where all the facilities are for a country that's important. They can get it mapped out, automate the drones, and take out all the important facilities within a matter of an hour.
Yeah.
But all automated computer-wise. Yeah. Now, you could hack into, could they hack into that and control the drones and do that?
Well, and there have been some, you know, amusing little TV shows that have covered that issue. I think there was a NCIS and a episode of Scorpion where they looked at basically what happens if somebody hacks the drones and starts driving them against us instead of for us. And yeah, I think things like that are doable. You know, we've seen it, that kind of stuff pulled off.
Take over a military.
Yeah.
Military satellite.
Yeah. You know, I think it's important to be having that discussion. The problem that we face here as a country, quite frankly, is that the Senate and the Congress, the people who make the laws that ultimately drive the policy, are a bunch of technologically inept old timers.
They have no clue.
Yeah, and I hate to pick. I just turned 62, so it's not like I'm like, you know, the super millennial or anything.
But you're a geeky 62.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, I'm a boomer. But these people, for whatever reason, are nearly all attorneys. They have no technical background. We have very few people in the Congress that have any kind of a technology background. And they don't listen to people that they have either on staff or who are lobbying or whatever.
It's a very top-down, yeah, I'm in power and yeah, I don't need to listen to you and attitude.
And attorneys,
and it's unhealthy.
Yeah, attorneys are wired up to fight. Their whole worldview is adversarial, me against you, us against them, prove it to me, what have you got for evidence? And it's kind of like these people are going to wait until it's happened once, and then there will be like, oh, holy cow, well, we didn't see that coming. We need to do something. There'll be a whole bunch of new laws that won't do squat. That'll be probably impactful on our rights under the Constitution, just like
a bunch of Keystone Cops running around every time there's a problem instead of actually planning it out.
We'll end up federalizing some other poor group of employees like we did with the airport screeners after 9/11, you know, and it created the TSA for no good reason.
Well, but this is kind of serious when you have a group of NSA employees doing it through a film.
Well,
because they can't come out as whistleblowers because everybody knows what happened to Snowden.
Yeah, whistleblowers. Yeah.
And everything. Yeah, I mean, they're very attacked right now. That's very well documented. Yeah. And everything is top secret.
Well,
which is ridiculous. Like, everything is top secret now.
Yeah.
So,
and the motivation.
How do you make something into a national debate that needs to be a national debate when everything is top secret?
Yeah. The reason that these people came forward is, quite frankly, a lot of people who are working in the NSA and for FBI and other agencies that are covered in their homeland and people in the military actually do care very deeply about the welfare of the United States and the welfare of the people of the United States. And they're there doing what they consider to be important work. If it's not God's work, it's like right next. They're patriots in the true sense of the term. You know, I mean, my opinion of Snowden is he's a patriot in the true sense of the term. And, you know, Obama should pardon him and let him come back.
He created a national conversation that needed to be created.
Yeah.
And I believe that these other NSA people that came forward anonymously, I don't think they would have came forward if it wasn't for Snowden.
Well, and then there was another guy. There's a guy that actually just got arrested earlier this week for pinching something. And the, you know, details are sketchy because, of course, like you mentioned, it's all top secret, so we can't really talk about it. There's more and more of that happening. The truth of the matter is that whatever we tell our own population becomes the knowledge of our enemies too. But the reality that we don't talk about is that our enemies have this information already.
They're hacking into us and everything else. Yeah. The people who don't have it is our people.
Yeah. Certain members of Congress who aren't sitting on those committees where they get that stuff.
Sure, exactly.
But in any event, it's something that ought to happen. It's something that needs to happen. I don't think it'll happen until after we have an event, and I just hope that it's small enough that it doesn't kill you know, 50% of the population. But, you know, I mean, if they, okay, you know, we hacked the grid and we turned off the lights in Washington, D.C., and we left them off for 3 months. You know, that's a statement. Doesn't isn't necessarily going to wipe out thousands of people from starvation or lack of sewage facilities. But it's a statement, you know. And hey, you might get
that would be a very painful statement.
You might get a little motivation at that point. Now, having said that, I'm sure the FBI is going to be like, "Hey, what's this guy talking about?" NSA scooping out stuff up out of the, you know, whatever. Guys, we're having a conversation, you know. America. please don't arrest me. I'm trying to go to my cabin.
Well, let's talk about the Snowden movie that just came out.
Yeah.
And one thing that they, you know, they pointed out of how we are being, Americans are being watched. Everybody's being watched.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And they can get it absolutely everything.
Yep.
Now, they also pointed out that Americans are being watched more than other citizens, which is interesting. They're watching the U.S. citizens more than other people.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that they pointed out was that we don't necessarily use this for security. We use it to further our position in the world economically.
Yep.
And that is something that people don't realize. And our enemies are not even our enemies. People around the world have been talking about this for a long time. Media in other countries talk about this. The one group of people in our country that don't know about it is our own citizens.
Yep.
Because they think that everything we do is for good purpose. And, you know, hey, I would rather be in power than not be in power, because if you're not in power, then somebody else is going to do that to you. So there is an argument there. But at the same point, are we really, should we really be using our national defense dollars to further corporate interests all over the world?
And the answer is no, but we're gonna. The fact of the matter is that the way it works in Washington, D.C. is the people who can fund reelection campaigns get paid attention to. If you're a government contractor and are getting paid God knows how many millions of dollars to do work, and then you go turn around and fund some campaigns with some of the profits, well, then you get more work. So it's citizens of the United States pay taxes, and we can have a whole conversation about that, so let's not. But the taxes go into a big pot of money for the members, you know, our elected officials. Their primary thought is, how do I get some of that tax money to turn up in my election campaign? Seriously, I mean, really, there's a link.
Yeah,
okay?
Exactly.
And so, sure. And so, yeah, you know, it's like we spend money on guns and bombs and planes and ship, and then we make sure that the countries that we're cultivating as allies also buy their stuff from us. So then there's, you know, foreign aid programs where, you know, the foreign aid goes out and then it comes back in the form of purchases to United States companies, and those companies, in gratitude to their elected officials, just make sure that the campaign gets funded, and then they're reelected and they serve again. And the revolving door that exists between, you know, when you're finally voted out of office, or you decide you've had enough and you retire, you go into private practice as an analyst or a lobbyist.
They make great money when they get out of government.
They make eight times as much money as they did as a senator or congressman. And now they're busy trying to get back into that pool of money because it affects their paycheck. And, you know, it's in a free market economy, some of this is just, it can't be avoided. You have to understand the game and play the game the way it's played. But for those of us who are just pawns in the machine, well, for all the spying that the government is doing on its own citizens is nothing compared to the kind of information collection that Google and Microsoft and Yahoo and every...
Well, yeah, the data that they have on everybody is absolutely
like
amazing.
Whatever you thought was private between you and someone else ain't private, because it's the someone else put it in a database and it's out there.
Exactly.
Yeah, the only secrets you can have are the ones you're keeping to yourself, and maybe not those.
Well, I have another show that I want to do on that was recently put out in July, that there's $9.3 trillion of unapproved adjustments. They just can't find them. They just had to do a, you know, one-time adjustment in the military budget.
Yeah.
$9.3 right. trillion. I don't know if you heard about that.
No.
That was put out in July.
No, I haven't followed that.
Yeah, I tweeted that and I said, okay, I need to find somebody that knows about this, because this is, that's my next big investigation, is to figure that out. But yeah, it was, it's on a, it's a military site.
Yeah.
.mil. And they got it there. And I'm like, how can that be? The budget's only like $1.5 trillion or whatever.
Yeah.
And you're doing an adjustment in 2005 of 9.3?
Yeah. And I wonder, one of the, my other fun military conspiracy theories is a two-parter. The first one is, when did we decide that we wanted trained and battle-experienced citizenry in the United States? Because when you take National Guard units and you send them off to Iraq and Afghanistan, this flies in the face of the purpose of the National Guard entirely. But now, instead of a professional army, what you really have is a whole bunch of everyday people who have all of a sudden been battle-hardened. Okay, so my first question is, why? Why would you do that? They keep cutting the professional army, get smaller and smaller and smaller. And so then we pull in these sort of like, do we want to call them paramilitaries? I mean, the National Guard units, originally it was a great way to get away from once a weekend and for 2 weeks of summer and go play guns in the woods.
It's like having contractors for business. You don't have to really hire them.
That's the second part, is when did it become more economical to hire contractor groups like Blackwater or whoever? These guys get paid way more money than they ever got paid as soldiers. So they come out of the military, they're recruited by military contractors, they're paid way more money. Isn't that more expensive than having more professional soldiers? I mean, I don't get
it. Oh, when you look at the costs, it's crazy. It's
yeah,
it's
and
crazy.
And so I'm a little lost here, but there seems to be a new way of fielding military forces, that it's a change and it's interesting, and I haven't quite figured out exactly why or who it serves or why it's beneficial to the government to do it that way, but, you know, hey, whatever.
The privatizing of all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Well, that's a whole nother show that we can talk about. Always so fun to have on. I love talking about this stuff. These are actually very serious issues, as we both know.
Yep.
But it's really fun to talk about.
Yeah.
What can people do to learn more? Because I know you have a blog. I know you have all these interesting things you do. So
do your
little spiel here.
Yeah. I mean, I've got a blog at wiseguyscybersecurity.com where I cover mostly issues that people face day to day and could do something about if only they'd change their behavior or something like that. So my focus tends to be very much of a, not on the global issues, more practical for the individual. We are in an election year, and we seem to be given a choice between two really not popular choices. I'm encouraging my politically motivated friends everywhere to consider a third party. I'll be voting Libertarian this year for Gary Johnson, but hey, vote Green. My goal, if I had one, I mean, I do, but you know, I'm not doing anything to implement it. So it's not really a goal if you're not putting anything behind it. I think it would be stunningly great if 25 to 33% of the people who vote at the polls don't vote Republican or Democrat, because
so that we can create a third party.
Well, maybe you can, maybe you can't, but you can send a heck of a message. Even 18%, if there were like 15 to 18% of the voters who voted third party, the major parties would have to go, hey, we're like losing it. We're doing it wrong. Something's happening here. But people keep the old saw is, hey, voting for a third party is throwing your vote away. This year, I think you can basically throw your vote away no matter where you vote. So vote with your heart instead of your head. Pick a candidate that is someone you really got espousing positions you really believe in. and vote them. And if you really want a big wall, you know, across Mexico, fine, you know, vote for that guy. But if you don't vote for him just because your dad always voted Republican. I mean, hey, think for yourself, do something new this year, you know?
Well, unless you're like the beer commercial where they have that wall, but it's really short and they use it for putting their beer on.
Yeah.
Well, did you see the commercial? That wall seems like it might be okay.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the wall and it's kind of like, what's that really about? Hey, okay, let's for a moment say that we accept that global warming is happening. We don't necessarily have to accept that humans are making it happen, but the temperatures are going up, you know, sea levels are rising, ice is melting, and it's getting hot. Maybe we're just building a wall to keep people from coming north where it's cool.
Okay, that's probably why.
Or
if it freezes suddenly.
I mean, I don't understand why we've traded one group of hardworking immigrants for another group of hardworking immigrants. Now you've got towns like Barron, Wisconsin. Drive through there someday. It's full of Muslims because they hired them to process turkeys. Why did they hire the Muslims? Because we kept sending the Mexicans back. And it's like,
I don't really care what people are. I think everybody should be treated fairly.
I don't either. But it's kind of like, what do we got against people from Mexico? I don't get it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't need a wall. What we need is a toll booth. You want to come in the United States and work? Come up, fill out some documentation, pay $100, walk across the border. Bing, we just made $100.
And if they can show that there's work for them within the week that somebody wants to hire them.
Yeah, well,
there has to be like some process for it, but it makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like they're all doing work that the rest of us wouldn't touch if we were desperate. And hey, let's be real. Yeah.
Well, some people maybe if they're unemployed and they aren't skilled and they haven't done much, maybe they should have that work ethic.
Yeah.
But
I don't know, man.
You know,
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know many college degree people who might be out of work who want to go clean hotel rooms.
Well, I'm talking people who haven't even gotten their high school diploma
because
they blew off high school and now they're sitting there in their I don't know, trailer, and they can't even afford heat for that. Well, maybe you could go do some work. That's a different story.
Whole nother story,
and that's a whole nother thing. But, okay, I am going to put your information, like I always do, up on my radio page.
Perfect.
And we'll go from there. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm sure I'll have you back soon.
Okay, thanks, Sarah. Good weekend.
You too. And that's it for today. I hope you learned something from this episode. It is a very serious threat to our way of life here in the United States, so it's something that we should be talking about on a national level. But we do have to remember that 20 years ago, 40 years ago, we probably more like 40, 50 years ago, we existed without any of this stuff. So life will go on if they take down our computer networks. The problem is if they do something where they can take over weapons and actually use them against us. It could get kind of serious on those situations, so we need to have a handle on that. But and your business, if they're going to steal information and cost you millions of dollars, that's a pretty serious situation as well. So I hope you take it seriously and you look into it, and I hope this provides you some information as well. All the contact information is on my radio page at sarahwestall.com. And for now, everybody have a great day.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, as Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in Mondays at 12 noon Pacific Time and learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today.